This episode of Super Pulp Science is brought to you by Quirkylicious. Honestly, just Google Quirkylicious. All my stuff pops up.
This is an ad.
Yeah.
Attention, citizens. It's time for Super Pulp Science.
This is Super Pulp Science, where we talk about how genre gets made. I'm here with my producer, Dan Vadeboncour, and my long-suffering co-host, Chasing Artwork, also known as Justin Curry.
Oh, you flipped around that time.
Yeah. You know what? Never give them what they expect. Never give them what they expect. We were just discussing, dear listener, the foibles of getting people on the show and the... Are we going to name our phantom guests today? We won't name them, but I was on. Absolutely. Are we going to?
I have this. No problem throwing shade Drake's way. We're good enough friends that it would take a lot to cause issues there. But Quirkylicious, also known as Drake, was supposed to be on the show this week, but he was a no-show.
I'm dropping books like crazy in my library right now. It's like an avalanche.
I have a new book that I've added to my collection. I'm awkwardly segueing into the fact that I picked up Dragon Any this week. I saw Greg in person, went to the studio, picked it up, and I actually haven't read it yet. I'm actually saving it to read with my daughter. So, but it's very cool. It's huge. It was way bigger than I expected it to be. How many pages?
Me too. Like just the texture on the cover and the foil.
Nice.
All turned out.
Yeah, it's really nice.
You, Dan, my father and my neighbor, who also backed the project, are the first three people other than Justin and I to, in my circle anyway, to hold the books outside of our household. And everyone that held it said the exact same thing. Wow, it's way bigger than I thought it would be. And man, this texture is so nice. And there's a lot of innuendo you could edit out of this conversation, but the truth is it's a kid's book. So let's not do that. I'm sure at this point, Justin, the number of them that you've packed up, they start to feel just like objects rather than books full of all your work. I'd be curious to know how your relationship with the work changes now that it's an object that you have to pack up and put into the grand machine of book publishing.
Because it was such a like a quick timeline compared to a lot of book projects, like I've been thinking about it and planning it and rolling around in my head for so long, but actual getting down to brass tacks and working on it started right around when COVID started, and I worked on it nonstop until it was printed. So now that it's here, it almost seems surreal. Like I did it in fugue state, like I barely, like it was like a dream that happened, and I can't believe it's all done. It just like the timeline was so much quicker than most books. It's surreal is how I would explain how it feels in my head.
Now, I've said a number of times on the podcast that I think your illustration took a huge leap in this one. Do you think it's partially because you didn't have any time to second guess it and you just kind of leaned hard into what you were good at doing and it just showed up on the page? I don't mean to cut you off. Well, I do kind of, but not on purpose.
I think it was just all the tricks and tips and just practice I'd gotten since my last book, like storybook, I think was Red and See-Through was the last sequential I did. So it's been like a year or two since I did a sequential work. So I think I've just learned all these new little things from different prints and different projects that now I just had a sequential project to apply them to. So I think it was just, I've been working hard and now you get to see it in book form.
It's a proper synthesis. Are your FedEx boxes in the stores yet?
No.
Pure Later. Wasn't it Pure Later?
Later? Oh, sorry, FedEx. You're not invited to this.
Me and the 12 other artists who participated in the Pure Later project should be getting our physical boxes yet. I have not received mine, and I'm following a bunch of those artists now, and I haven't seen any of them posting about their physical box yet either. So I don't think they've arrived yet, but that's a good point. I should fire an email and just see where they're at. But speaking of shipments.
Yeah, shipments. Good segue. I was going to do that.
The entire weekend doing basically data entry. I was taking all the Kickstarter addresses and copying them from Kickstarter and pasting them into my shipment program. And at about midnight on like Sunday, I work on a Wacom Cintiq, which is a big screen you draw on with a pen. And it's my arm and shoulder were getting so sore from doing the same movement over and over and over again. I plugged a mouse into my Wacom, and it's the first time I've ever used a mouse on that computer setup in like the 4 years that I've had it. It felt dirty, like I was doing something very wrong. But I used a mouse to get all the addresses in there. And I learned a lot of things about addresses around the world and formats and things that I thought were bizarre, but that's just how they do it in Finland and Germany and stuff like that. So it was a learning experience.
Their addresses aren't weird. You just aren't very cultured.
I'm just not used to it. You don't need provinces or territories when you're in a lot of places in the world. And I thought that was, you know, part of it. And then my post office guy, the guy who came to pick everything up, there was probably about 350 huge packages that needed to go out. It wasn't all the Dragon Nanny orders, but it was about 3/4 of them. And luckily it was the post guy who's picked up from me before, and I had warned him that this was coming. So he came with a huge hand cart and as many empty boxes or like postal trays as he could fit onto the hand cart. And we were almost able to do it in one. The only reason we couldn't do it in one trip was we thought we probably overloaded the freight elevator. And so we split it into two.
I mean, it's a pretty old elevator, to be honest. It is
an old elevator, but about when we were getting near the end of that first trip, I'm like, we should stop here. I don't want anybody to be getting stuck in the freight elevator. Like, especially you have more packages to pick up. And then
Can you imagine how his day would be ruined by that? Oh, man.
Man, and they are especially going through some things right now. He was telling me about how outside the sorting facility in Winnipeg, there's a lineup of trucks to drop things off. So they're not even, like, they're so backed up within the facility that they can't even have the trucks just drop things off. There's a lineup just to dump them off to then get sorted. And this was a couple of days ago, so like December 6th or 7th, something like that. So the mail is, and that's just Winnipeg. We're a pretty small city, so I can only imagine what like Toronto or New York or some of those places are going through right now. I'm really glad we are ahead of the ball and on top of things for shipping these out well ahead of when we promised them, because, yeah, who knows?
When we were doing all those mail outs for the baby metal books, remember we were right in the middle of a mail strike?
Right.
So like, I took all those orders, we had all these people show up, and then suddenly no one's working at the post office and no one really cares and they won't give me tracking numbers and they won't, like, there was just a complete breakdown. So, and I thought it could never, you know, what could ever be like that again? Looks like it's the reverse. It's like there's so much mail being delivered. So let's cross our fingers. But we'll be playing Santa to all the Winnipeg orders.
Yeah.
So in theory, by the time people hear this podcast, if they had backed the book and they're from Winnipeg, they should check their porch because maybe the book is lost on their porch.
And we're doing that for a couple of reasons. And one of them being because of COVID and safety issues, we figured the less people that have their hands on this product before it shows up at people's door, the better. And another point, like it's kind of special that the creators of said project are dropping it off. And also like it's you know, driving around Winnipeg is not it's not a huge, huge city again. So it's something that we can spend half a day doing. And it also saves us some shipment costs, but then we were including all these little extra things in those packages, so it's added value.
I can carry nearly 80 gigs of data in my head.
The foil dragon nanny that Dan is in your background there, the second batch of those was actually misprinted. They printed the wrong foil print. And so I was on track to have everything ready to go, but then because I had to get a bunch of foils reprinted, which just arrived today, so there's going to be a second batch that's going to be shipped out next week. Yeah. So I'm only a couple days behind on what I thought I was going to be. So it was fine. I kind of needed the mental break from shipping labels and packaging things. So them kind of slowing me down was probably good for my mental health.
I was saying a lot of, you know, like my neighbor, for example, and my dad and my wife are saying like, oh, you must be so much more relaxed because all that stuff is on its way out and Justin did the bulk of that work and you might take a load off. I actually know that I won't relax until people start letting us know they got them.
Yeah.
You know, it's like there's a step that because it's our fault if they don't, that I still have a lot of, like I have more anxiety than I would otherwise. You know, if a publisher is handling that stuff, you know, people who are good at that, doing that all the time, are sorting that fulfillment. So I have a lot of confidence in you, but I think it's partially because it's the megalomaniac in me that because I wasn't so involved in making those decisions, and I'm just a cog now in the chasing artwork machine, gives me more to worry about. Whereas if I'd been working my plan, I'd be like, oh, okay, pretty relaxed.
It's nice with the shipment software that I'm using. I attach people's emails to their shipments. So when it goes into the system, they get an email saying a package is on its way. And when it's delivered, I get an email and they get an email saying like, you have your package. So I'm but because of the bulk of what I'm doing, I'm constantly getting these notifications that things are getting delivered. So it's comforting to see those emails coming in and that there's, when people ask where things are, there's ways to kind of track it down. Whereas before, when I just put postage stamps on them and sent it off, there was nothing, right? So at least this way, there's a couple different ways to track it down and keep track of things. Learning.
Yeah, a great relief. I had an interesting call, pivoting away from that to a different collaboration. Andreas Sardesen, that we did the Red Earth, you know, they adapted the graphic novel to the stage play and all that. For the dear listener, you can see our previous episodes about how all that shook out. But a grant opportunity from the federal government floated through. So for the listener that is not in Canada, in Canada, the arts does receive some support funding because it's hard to be commercially successful as an artist. And so you can apply, get yourself registered to receive updates whenever there is a new sort of fund available. So because I'm on that list, I received that email. And then a few other people who are also on that said, hey, this one is, you should check this out. So I got from Lyndon, my letterer, send it to me. And then when I checked my email, I also had it. And so it is a interesting opportunity to pull in different artists, performers, writers, actors, and try to create a, for lack of a better way to describe it, an entertainment experience that allows us to spend this grant money on a whole bunch of people who normally would be touring, doing shows, right, be out in public that now can't do that. So the money is specifically earmarked to support those things. Your chance of funding goes up from what I can understand by the number of people that you will employ with the money who normally would be out in public being employed that can't be. And the number of audience members who can be reached so that they're encouraged to stay home during the pandemic for a couple of hours over a couple of weeks every day so that there's a reason for them to stay home to receive this rather than go out for their entertainment. So when I was reading it, I found it a really interesting way of the government to adjust its funding. Normally, the Canadian government puts a bunch of money together for travel, for exhibition, for things like that. So they clearly have all that money not being spent, which they are now repurposing to funnel down into the arts in a way that I've never seen done before. It was really quite astounding. So, and a dear listener who is from Manitoba or from Canada that's hearing this and say, how do I get involved in these grant opportunities? You just, it's gotten so much easier over the last couple of years. There's an online portal. You make a profile, you put your email, your phone number in there, and then you just get notified whenever there's some kind of money available that fits the little boxes that you tick for your own expertise. Do you always get the grants you apply for? Never, almost never. It's a little bit like the lottery. Is it astounding that the government would put that money aside anyway? I think so, and we're pretty lucky. So for a couple of days' work to put your grant proposal together, it can be worth the outreach.
Especially, you imagine, like, once you write one successful grant proposal, like, snowballing that into other grant proposals, like, probably that first one is the hardest, is what I'm getting at. And after that, writing second, third, fourth ones, it just gets easier and easier to apply.
What I've found, and I've applied for, so in the interest of full disclosure, any grant I've ever applied for myself, where I wrote the whole grant myself, I have never received the funding. When I was ever like, hey, I'm this and I have this project and I'm the one who's gonna get paid for it. I've never received money for those projects. All the ones that I've received funding for were related to, hey, I'm gonna take this pool of money and I'm gonna share it with these 5 people or these 25 people or these 7 people or these 4 people. Those were the ones that, and all of those people helped in writing the grant and organizing it. Those are the ones that I have been part of receiving that money for. So it gets easier to be rejected. And you stop taking it personally when you realize that it's just part of the process. Is like, here's a form to fill out that might mean that the government supports this project. But it also, I try to make projects that are also commercially minded so that they don't require grants in order to happen. So the long-winded answer to your question is, it gets easier to write them, yes. But the more you're writing, the more often you're getting that no. And it shows up in your portal. There's actually an app apparently you can download. I never have. I just log into it. And you can check on the status of your grants, and it'll tell you when they're pending, when they're in review. There are juries. Yeah. An important detail here is that it's not just a government robot saying, yes, you are worthy of this money. It's usually a jury of your peers who are brought together to evaluate projects of that sort. So if you have a graphic novel project, it's a jury of people who have worked on graphic novels looking at the proposals and saying, this one is good, this one is not, right? Same with theater or film or, you know, any other thing. So it's kind of neat because you know that it's human beings, fallible human beings, foibled opinions that caused you to get it or not get it. And so you can keep applying. You can take the same grant and apply again the next year and know that it's a different jury, and apply the next year and know that it's a different jury. And sometimes you land on the right jury that likes your work or likes the direction you're going for. And you know,
how long does it usually take to hear back?
Can take, you know, depending on when you apply, but anywhere from, oh man, they all have different timelines. Between 3 and 6 months, you usually know something.
That's not bad.
Yeah. And it's not bad. But again, you don't plan on grants. You don't say, this is part of how I make this project happen. But when they arrive, they're an enormous relief to your cash flow, to be sure. You know? And the only reason why we're so anxious to get on that scenario now is because all our other means of income are closed.
Yeah.
So I know that there'll be a lot of people applying for these things. So not to be too choked up if I don't get it.
If I can get it out.
How?
A cranial drill and a pair of forceps.
Have you, Gregory, done much in the way of online, like opening an online store or selling things online in a way that you haven't been doing in the past? I wanted to have this conversation just because I've seen a lot of people, like a lot of artist friends of ours, starting them for the very first time that never really had an, like always had an online presence, but never had an online store. And now for the first time, they're opening a Facebook store or they're opening an Etsy or something along those lines. Where are you at with that? And what are your thoughts on online selling of your work?
I have some things for sale online through my big cartel. Mm-hmm. They're few and far between. It's usually commission slots I put up on there. So you're interested in a commission, that's the way to check. If I have any, they're usually up there, like any slots available. And I have some books, but I am way behind in my own admission in having a proper pandemic-ready online store. My wife, who sells vintage online and has had a, built her own online store, is far ahead of me in those capacities. And every now and then she's like, how come you're not doing this? How come you're not doing this? And I say, because I'm drawing this.
Do you feel the urgency there? Because you have so much freelance work, you don't need to put as much effort into that category.
I do not have an embarrassment of riches when it comes to freelance work right now. So it would be great to have a bigger online presence. My problem is that, you know, like when you said you spent a weekend of data entry, I'd rather die. And also I don't have that kind of time within the schedule of things I'm trying to accomplish now, homeschooling my kids, being a half decent husband, father, and a homemaker during the pandemic. To also add the swear factor of building an online store and learning all of that, which is something I'm not particularly keen on.
The weekend of data entry was just because of the Kickstarter success. That's not a normal thing unless you're doing really, really well with your online store.
That's fair enough. But I also, you know, you sell yourself pretty short. You're exceptionally well at, and I've observed it many times, of just saying like, here's 7 hours of shitty work that I have to do. And it's really boring and it's just compartmentalized, but it's just what we have to do to get to the fun part. You're really good at setting that aside in your workflow. Maybe you don't even notice it, but I notice it. I'm like, oh man, he's really good at that. Whereas I get swept off in the next project much more quickly. Mm-hmm. And anything that feels like a interruption to just do essentially data entry work or like packaging up things or whatever is so much more stressful. Like it's uncanny the amount of stress created for me to have like 10 packages to send out versus someone saying, I need you to illustrate 100 pages in 2 months. That, no stress. 100 pages, 2 months, almost impossible, but I don't get any stress from that. Mm-hmm. That's like, I will dig into that. And I was explaining to my kids the difference between things that are hard to do, but effortless, right? Like they take a lot of time, but they don't, there's no effort in it. Illustration to me is effortless. I don't get stressed out from it. It takes it all away. The deadline, I get a little antsy around the deadline time, but the actual work itself is calming to me, even if it's 16 hours straight in a day. Whereas 2 hours of waiting in line with a stack of packages and I am an asshole for the rest of the day. It's just the way my personality is built and I'm not sure how I'm going to get over it to survive pandemic land with an online store. You seem to do it so effortlessly.
Well, that's the having them come pick up the packages. Once I sorted that out, I use Canada Post has a website. If you Canada Post, once you create your like a business profile, then you have access to this ShipShape app of theirs, whereas you put in the address, And then you fill out your little customs form, like, why are you sending this to the States? How much is it worth? Blah, 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 blah. And then you hit, you know, add shipment, and they tell you, okay, it weighs this much, it's this big, it's going there, it's going to cost you $14, and pay with your credit card, and then you print your own label. So you print your own label, slap it on there, and then you set a appointment for a guy to come to your house or your studio and pick it up for you. And when I started, it was free, because I think like your first month of it was free, or maybe it was just a promotion that was going on. But now it's $3.50 for a guy to come and pick that up.
For every package or for?
Just the one pickup. One pickup. But then if you don't want pickup, you've printed off your labels, you can then just go into a Canada Post and dump them on the counter and say, these are my packages, bye. And they don't, you don't need to do anything else with them.
Because the label's already attached.
Yes, it's already paid for, yeah. So once I figured that out, and that's like, I feel like I was kind of stubborn about learning how to do this properly, because it was the same thing. I knew there were solutions to all my problems like that. I was just too stubborn to take the day to sit and learn how to do it all. But now that I've finally done that, it was because of COVID that I sat and learned how to properly ship things like a real business. It's, yeah, all that stress that you were just talking about, I had that too. And now it's all gone just because I finally took the time to understand it and figure it out.
You used the word that was eluding me, which is stubbornness.
Yeah.
Is that I'm not stubborn about learning new technology these days. I'm not stubborn about like trying some new drawing techniques. Speaking of that, I've been using a tablet. I've drawn like a whole bunch of pages on a tablet, Justin.
My goodness.
I know, it's wild. It's totally wild. So I'm not averse to learning new things, but there's certain like administrivia related things that just, I don't like it. That's why I miss Sam so much. So much.
Does this bug you as much as it bugs me when somebody who doesn't do what you do, but takes a look at things and tells you how you could do it better? Like, oh, you're an artist and a publisher and this is your business. Well, you know, you're not online marketing well enough. If I were you, I would be doing this, that, and the other thing to have a bigger online presence. Why don't you just listen to me?
Yeah. Why don't you just, yeah.
Well, are they trying to get you to pay them to do that work, or what are they trying to do there?
No, I think they're just, just like if they were in your shoes, right? If they were a person who had an online following, they have all these ideas of how they would do it better.
Right, but they don't have a following, and they don't have a group of people they're trying to market to. They just have a perfect armchair. Well, you know,
yeah,
armchair quarterbacks have a long history in the human race.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah,
it's the analogy I use, which I've stolen, I believe, from Brené Brown, is of the arena. Right, when you are fighting in the arena, you're on the sand in the arena. The crowd is shouting all kinds of things at you,
right?
But you don't listen to the crowd, right? You're watching your opponent, because that's who your teacher is in that moment, not the crowd, right? So that's why, like, if someone like Drake had showed up on the episode, I was going to ask him, I saw him doing tons of commissions and lots of drawings like that. I was going to ask him how he was going about marketing that, doing that, shipping them out. You know, because he's in the sand, he's in the arena, right?
One of those people who's never had a real online store until just probably this past month. He's opened up a Facebook store, which I had questions about that as well. I have a Society 6. I used to have a big Cartel, but then I switched over to Squarespace. That's where my website is now. So I switched over, but it's very similar. But now Instagram has recently changed their entire layout to add a store button on there.
I just saw that in mine. Yeah, now I can add a store.
It's hooked up, and I think it's the same as a Facebook store. Like they're the same thing, because Facebook owns them both.
Mm-hmm. So I went down that rabbit hole a little bit. I think you would find it really easy to connect, because if you already have a Squarespace website, you just connect it.
Oh, really? Okay, so it's something I can, that's awesome that I'm not building yet another store.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, one thing I've found now that I'm putting more and more effort into the store, that first week of populating the store was that crappy work that I forced myself through that you were mentioning earlier. It was just, it was like data entry, right? It's old projects and old pieces and like just finding everything I have and making their postings and making their prices and doing all that. But now every time I'm opening the store and just adding two or three things to it, it's like I have this huge store already built. And now it's so easy just to add a little thing at a time. And over the past year, it's gotten so much. Yeah, it snowballs.
That's the exact same thing my wife has been saying. And for those who are interested, my wife is patronofdreams.com. You can find her store, online store.
Time, is this the first time you plugged your wife's business in three plus years of doing this podcast?
Probably. I asked her to come on the episode a few times, and she said, I'll probably just tell too much truth about you. So I don't know if you want
that. Good morning. This is your wake-up call.
Look who's here. Hey. Somebody just joined our Zoom call.
Drake, are you there?
Yeah, I was lurking.
Drake.
I just said puppy.
Is that Tachi or is that the new one?
This is the new one. This is Sayla.
Hey.
Yeah. She looks a lot like Tachi, doesn't she?
Yeah, it's the younger version of Tachi. Not as rolly.
Is there a condolence? Did something happen? Tachi's, you have two now.
No, we just wanted another dog, yeah.
Okay. I thought I'd missed the loss of a family member, and I felt guilty suddenly. I hadn't said something about it. But you have two.
Oh, Tachi's well. She's lurking in the corner there. Oh, now she's running off.
Drake,
yeah,
I have to admit to you something that's weighing heavy on my conscience.
What's up?
We thought you weren't going to make it to, we thought you were a no-show on the podcast, so we were talking trash a little bit, and we were going to send you our trash-talking episode.
Oh, man.
And then you showed up at the end, so now we have to take back anything mean we ever said.
I just ruined your entire theme of your podcast, I guess.
Right. Unexpected arrivals is the new theme of our podcast. We previously listed a number of questions we were going to ask you if you had been on the podcast. So we're really armed for that. Why don't we start with this, Drake? You have entered into the deep, terrible world of online stores recently.
Oh, yeah.
Tell me how that's going and what decisions you've made.
I don't know. It's actually been pretty recent, like you said. So I'm still pretty inexperienced and not sure if my expectations are just low, but I think I'm doing okay. I had Carmen set up a lot of the store just to like give her a job because she's kind of unemployed right now. I wanted to help her out and give her just like stuff to do. But yeah, I'm in charge of like marketing and advertisement. So I guess that's important. I don't know. So far, it's doing okay. I wish it was doing better, but like, you know, it's hard to compare it to like a high energy environment, like a convention versus like, just trying to like get someone who's scrolling through Instagram to like buy your shit.
Yeah, you're doing
it's okay so far.
What Facebook is for sale?
What was that?
Two questions at the same time. Hard hitting journalism. What is for sale in your store?
First, where are you selling it? Like it's through the Facebook store, like, which is hooked up to the Instagram store. It's the same thing.
Yeah, it's the same thing. I haven't actually even looked at what's it like on Facebook. I've just been focusing on my Instagram because that's where like my current followers are. I'm just selling my prints and my art book, and the art book has actually been moving really well the past month. The prints, not so much, but like I still get sales for prints. But yeah, for some reason, people prefer books online. And then at conventions, they prefer prints. I think that just because like at a convention, the prints are like up and displayed and people could be like, whoa, it's so big, amazing. And when you're scrolling on your phone, you're like, oh, this tiny little picture or this book that has lots of tiny pictures. So I don't know.
Yeah, it's weird. Totally agree. Books sell online, prints. Yeah, it just seems like another digital picture on the internet, maybe. They're so desensitized right to seeing beautiful artwork on their phone or on their computer screen that like you trying to sell one seems weird.
Yeah.
But when it's in person and they can, now they can like make that connection of like, ooh, this on my wall? Yeah, I want that.
Yeah, you know what definitely helps? Like when you have pictures of the prints like hanging somewhere or like framed. Yeah.
Mock-ups.
Yeah, then people in their brain, they're like, oh wait, this isn't just a picture on my phone. It's something I can tangibly hang up. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Have you had any shipment horror stories yet?
No, not yet. But like, I've had Carmen handle all the packaging and shipping. That's her job. And she hasn't run into anything, but I feel like when something like that does happen, she's gonna like freak out.
I think we've talked about it on the past about, was it, what do we say, 5%? 5% of shipments, something's gonna go wrong. And it doesn't matter like what you're doing. If you send out 100 things, up to 5 might have like delays. 1 or 2 got broken. 1 is stolen off a porch. 1 was dropped in a river. Like something's gonna happen regardless of what you do. So just to, like, I think now that I know that, when people come in and something happened, I'm more prepared for it. But the first couple were like, yeah, it was really, really hard on me to like deal with, like, people are disappointed in my service. Oh God. But now I know it's just mail goes through a lot of things and shit happens.
Yeah. I'm just waiting for that to happen. Honestly, I know it's going to, but like it hasn't yet. So I'm like, whew.
I noticed, Drake, also you've been doing a lot more commissions lately.
Yes.
And for the dear listener who is not familiar with Drake, just Google Quirkylicious and you will find so many incredible works of art that you will spend the next hour scrolling through that. But commissions, those are usually things that you choose to draw and then display. How did you pivot into the commission zone?
Well, I was doing studio work and commissions before I was doing like conventions and like my own designs and prints and whatever. So it wasn't that hard for me to pivot back into commissions because I worked for like a year for like a bunch of tiny mobile game studios. I don't know. Honestly, it was a nice change of pace just because I was being like my own boss for so long. It was kind of nice trying something different again, even though it was pivoting to something older, technically. Yeah, it hasn't been really bad. And so I've been busting out lots of commissions in 2020, but once 2021 hits, I'm thinking about pivoting back to my online store and focusing on like designs I want to do again and slowing down on commissions.
Actually, I had a question for you, Drake. Have you been, you've been commissioned to do some of like your full paintings. Have any of those been pieces that you've wanted to sell on your store as well? Like pieces that you might have wanted to do somewhere along the line. Somebody comes, I want you to paint this. And you know, it's something that you could sell at your table at a convention one day. How do you handle that?
Right off the bat, if it's something I can identify as a product I could market, I'll probably ask the client if they'd be willing to let me sell it, like reproduce it. Yeah, right off the bat. If they say no, then I'll just be like, oh, that sucks, but whatever, I'll do it anyway. Yeah. That hasn't happened.
Whoa. Not that you'd sell it anyway, but that you'll do the work for them anyway.
Yeah, I'll do the work for them anyway. Yeah.
Just checking.
You offer a lower rate? Like if it's a one-off, it's X amount, and if you can sell it after, it's a lower amount?
I don't think I do that. Think I just ask them, and if they say no, I won't do it. Or, yeah, sell it separately. But I haven't had a client commission me something where I think I could market to, like, you know, a general demographic. Because usually it's a personal character. I haven't gotten a commission of, like, a popular character yet.
I've got the goods, Ralphie. Now I just want to get them out of my head.
So I was playing around with this, like a businessy idea. And Gregory, I think you would have some thoughts on how this could work. Because I know you taught me the whole, if somebody commissions you to do like RoboCop, let's just say RoboCop, right? Somebody commissions me to do RoboCop. And so my first thing will be like, I love RoboCop. I'd love to sell that at conventions as well. It's this amount if it's a one-off just for you, and it's this amount, which is a lot less, if I can then sell it at my table and make, you know, my time and money back that way, right? So they're getting it for a less amount, but I'm going to sell it to other people. But is there something else in there where it's something that I know I can make money on my store? So if it sells, like, they can almost make their commission money back somehow. Like if they get me to do a piece that works in my style, is something I really want to do and sells really well online, they can earn back almost a commission, like a percentage off their commission. Does that make sense? Kind of the route I'm going here.
I see if what I, you're saying.
If, you're saying, yeah, if like, I get to make something that goes gangbusters through my store, I feel bad that they paid me to do that. Now I'm making much more money through my store than they paid me to do it. And is there a way to do a kickback?
So what you're saying is you want to help the person who the idea came from, even though they gave you permission. So yeah, you could say, like, you know, let's say it's 2 days it takes you to do the commission. So that's your day rate times two is what you charge them. And then you could say, but if I earn that back on the store selling the print, then I'll do another one for you.
Do another one? You get store credit?
Yeah, you get store credit. Like, you could give them store credit, right? Okay. And let them buy a bunch of other work. So then they have the one they made, and then you're basically giving them a kickback to say, like, hey, this also sold enough that if I had done it without you, it would have been worthwhile. I mean, the reason why you get people to pay up front with commissions, and dear listener, please get them to pay up front, never have them pay when you're finished, is because you wouldn't do the work if they hadn't asked you to, right? It's not
right.
But occasionally along the way, you have a moment of clarity where a perfect composition arrives and you realize you're doing an incredibly accessible piece that people are going to like. And yeah, you want to try to pivot on that and make some money, put it on your store. I think the right thing to do would be to offer something back to the person who is allowing you to do that. Do you run into some kind of accounting problem? I'm just thinking right now of, like, I'm thinking of my worst customers I've ever had, and would they a year later see that it's on the store, demand the accounting because you said that's what you would do, and then they don't believe you that it didn't sell, and now they want store credit, and, like, that's the worst part I could see happen.
This sounds like a headache. You know what I would do? I'd just say no to the commission and go do it on my own and be like, here, you want to buy this? Here, you can have it.
You're a monster. You're a monster. some other things we were going to ask you about, Drake, were related to just in general how your pandemic life is now, without visiting 25 cities a year, or in your case, 30 some cities a year. Now that you're just at home in that enormous chair that I see you pivoting in, what's your life like?
It's pretty boring. You know, I wake up, actually my schedule's exactly this. I wake up, I eat brunch with my girlfriend while we watch a TV show. I draw until we eat dinner, where we also watch a TV show together. After dinner, I continue drawing till midnight, and then I play games from midnight till 3 or 4 a.m., and then I rinse and repeat. Oh, some days we have to go pick up groceries, but that's it, yeah. That's been my life the whole year.
Crazy.
Oh, my God. I want to throw a baby at you and just see how you handle it.
Yeah.
Well, we did get a new puppy, so I don't know. That's as close as to a baby I'll be, but yeah. I think that was in part of it. We're like, man, this is kind of boring. Let's, like, get another dog. And we're like, all right, let's do that.
And you've been playing that new free game that everybody's playing, the Impact.
Genshin Impact, yeah.
Yeah. How's besides that, what have you been playing?
Well, Cyberpunk just came out yesterday, so I'm about to jump into that. Earlier in the year, I beat The Outer Worlds. I don't know if you've heard of it. You've heard of Fallout, right?
Yes.
It's basically by the same people who made Fallout. So it's like Fallout, but instead of being a dystopian, futuristic Earth, you're in a dystopian, spacey, like where you go from planet to planet and you're like the captain of a ship. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, it's really good. I wish it got like more attention or buzz than it did, but it's not a AAA studio, so that might be why they didn't have the marketing to really push it out there. That was amazing. Yeah, I think that's the only thing I've played early in the year other than Genshin Impact. I mean, I bought like the Far Cry franchise. I beat the third and fourth game. I started the fifth, but by that time I was burnt out, I think, and that's why I started Outer Worlds.
Gotcha. I recently bought
Far Cry 5.
Oh, so you did the fifth one. By
accident.
By accident? That's
By accident.
Yeah. Have you and the boys finished?
I thought there was more.
Go ahead, Justin.
Okay. Have you and the boys finished Zero Horizon Dawn yet?
Horizon Zero Dawn. We are on the last puzzle. We're like 5% left, I think, of the game. Yeah.
One I was thinking of picking back up. And isn't there's a like a second one or some DLC that just came out or is about to come out? Is that correct?
There's the Frozen Lands. There's
some add-ons.
Yeah, we finished that too. Snow Monsters. Now, aside from our video games, which I think Dan has another podcast all about video games, so we won't make him talk about video games on this podcast.
I could talk about it all day.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I was going to ask Drake, with all that drawing, have you undertaken any new techniques, new technologies, new ways of doing things?
I feel like, I started a new manga / comic series. So I've been getting back into like black and white art after painting for so long. And I feel like the more I do it, I become a little more efficient and figure out how to like simplify my grays and my black values with just my white values. I don't think I've developed any new like technical ways of doing things. Just kind of the same. Yeah.
Fine tuning. How's the Webtoon experiment going?
It sucks. Honestly, if you don't draw if you don't format your comic in the way they prefer, which is color and scrolling format, they go out of their way to not really try to advertise you. Like, they do advertise new titles or like people who are just uploading stuff on there. But if it's not in their preferred format, they won't even look at your stuff. And since mine's in black and white, which is kind of a manga style, and even though I did put it in scrolling format, it's not the exact same scrolling format they prefer. None of the people who work there or anything would want to even look at it or advertise it. And so it's really hard to get people to read it unless you already have a big fan base developed in another place or another social media.
Because when you were building it, you were trying to keep in mind not only would it be one long scrollable format, but you were going to print it as a physical book eventually. So you're trying to like do both at the same time.
Yeah, I was trying to kill two birds with one stone. And that basically hurt my ability to really perform well on the mobile platform, I think.
Hmm. And like, haven't had a chance to physically print it yet, right? Because I mean, conventions would have been your storefront.
Yeah, conventions was going to be the plan where I was going to distribute it. So I don't know. I feel like it's too late for me to switch the format to pure
Kickstarter.
Mobile.
Do a Kickstarter.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe. I feel like after trying this webtoon / manga experiment for so long, I kind of feel like I miss painting and doing elaborate illustrations more, or I found more joy out of it, which is why in 2021 I'm pivoting back to my online store and doing that. I'll still be doing my comic, but like, I can't imagine it making me like a good enough income that'll cover like my mortgage bills even per month, so.
I've been charged with recovering the head of the Mnemonic Courier.
I think last time we had you on the podcast, you were just finishing up your 200-hour smash piece, and you were just about to get started into this comic project.
Really? Oh, man, that was forever ago then.
Yeah, why don't you name drop it and tell people what it's about?
All right, so my webtoon is called ePro. It's a play on eSports, which is professional video gaming. Basically, it's a slice of life / action type series. If you're familiar with manga genres, it's more of a shonen series. So it's really focused on like action, I guess. But yeah, it's slice of life. It's about a group of kids just trying to make it as professional esports players. And it's about them dealing with just like the real life problems of trying to get into esports. But it also has like really cool fights within the game. I just thought that'd be really interesting to do because there's so many cartoons and anime and comics about video gaming culture out there that don't actually properly portray what it's like to try and get into gaming professionally. A lot of them are like, oh, I get sucked into a video game, and if I die in this video game, I die in real life. They're all like that. None of them actually tackle or represent like competitive gaming culture and what it's actually like. So yeah, I really wanted to do that.
So it's basically the Mighty Ducks, but for video games.
Like, yeah.
Like the underdogs trying to compete with the big boys.
Yeah. Actually drew a lot of my inspiration from like existing sports, anime, and manga. Like there's this one volleyball one called Haikyuu that was really big last year and like the new seasons this year. And that's kind of what inspired me initially, just like do a sports-based genre comic. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah.
I have a question related to that and an observation. I know that you know about Ghost in the Shell, and one of the things that the black and white Ghost in the Shell would do is every new chapter there'd be 3 or 4 painterly rendered pages in full color that would get included in the volumes. Have you considered rendering in your painter style these characters for a couple of pages at a time? In printing, you can add those signatures in pretty easily these days. So you could pick which color pages you wanted. And you could maybe get the best of both worlds, because then you could have your store have those prints of your characters from that series. And then they also, that work double dipped into your comic when it's printed.
I've definitely thought about it. Actually, for every cover I have in color, but it's still in cel shading, so it's not my painting style. I just feel like the way I paint is so, like, deviates so much from the style I'm trying to establish in the manga that it wouldn't even look like it's from the same artist. So I haven't really thought about painting anything from ePro yet anyway. But yeah, I still do like the covers in color just to like, you know, get people's attention or just to, so people would be like, oh, so that's his hair color or that's the color of his outfit or whatever.
Drake, I feel the pain of that because I've done about 150 illustrations in what is essentially a completely different style than I normally do over the course of the pandemic, enough that I could put it together into a little book. But it would be like to market it to people, be like, for fans of this guy, here's some work that looks nothing like it. Yeah. I don't know how or what I'll do to market it because it's so different than the work I normally do. It might just be a thing I don't know. I was looking at something like Webtoons for it because I've done them a panel at a time. So turning it into a scroll would be pretty easy. Yeah. But it's like you say, it doesn't fit into what people are looking for on that platform. So it doesn't seem like that's the best use of my time. So maybe Kickstarter, Justin.
Yeah, maybe Kickstarter. I did like see some news how like there's way more comic Kickstarters because of COVID now.
Well, everybody had our plan, right? We print the book and bring it to conventions to sell. And so that's not a problem.
Kickstartering it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
And especially in your situation, you have so much, like, so much is done already. So like the bulk of it's done. You would just have to, you know, build in tiers with other prints of yours, existing artwork, and then, yeah, figure out what else you wanted to add it as rewards. But the work would be building the Kickstarter. Everything else is pretty much ready to go, right? So.
Yeah, I would point out another encouraging thing for you, Drake, if you wanted to go the Kickstarter route or anything crowdfunding related. You have an enormous body of work available for people to see online. They know that you're not a fly-by-night entity. Like when they look up Quirkalicious's Kickstarter and they find Quirkalicious online, they will see a huge body of work that spans for years. And I think that goes a long way for giving people confidence to back a project, even if it's in a slightly different style. They know it's because you're trying something new. I think you shouldn't sell yourself short there.
Okay.
Justin's the new Kickstarter guru now, so you ask him lots of questions all the time.
I did, I noticed early on a lot of Kickstarter graphic novels would be kind of new teams of artists and writers and colors and stuff like that. So they would come together to make this Kickstarter project, and they would kind of form a new brand for this project, right? So we're, you know, Red Band or something like that. Team Red Band, we're making a comic. So we're launching the Kickstarter. We're also launching a brand new Instagram and Facebook and everything else. And we're rebranded under this new name. But the problem there is nobody's following their Instagram or Facebook or any of their social media because they're brand new and they haven't done anything yet. This Kickstarter is their very, very first thing. So rather than flying under the flag of like their lead artist or writer or anything like that, they try to like make a new company just for the Kickstarter. And that seemed to always not work or not work well in most cases because you can't advertise on Instagram when you're brand new and nobody's following you. You can't advertise on Facebook when you have no following either, you know? So that was seemed to be a big problem. Whereas you'd be a Quirkalicious Kickstarter, you have all your foundation set up and ready to go.
I don't think my brand is even that big on Instagram though. Like, I'm kind of old news. Like, I was big on DeviantArt, but on Instagram, I only have like 20,000 followers. I've been hard stuck to under 20,000 followers.
Only?
Yeah, just 20,000.
Like, I know artists who have like 100,000, and that's what I consider as like a well-known Instagram artist. So, I don't know.
You're right, Drake. You're yesterday's news.
I'm totally yesterday's news, yeah. I'm a dinosaur.
Oh my goodness. How are we doing for time, Dan? I know we ran over,
but that's okay. You can go a little bit longer, maybe another 10 minutes if you want.
Okay, I just didn't want to keep you hostage.
No, I'm good.
But... we're joining late. Sorry.
No, it's okay. I can edit around it. It's all good.
So I wanted to ask both, well, maybe all three of you. I've been kind of switching up how I organize myself. Every couple of months, I seem to like get into a new format of how I organize my life and projects. And it usually consists of, as I think of something I need to do later, I'll write a note into my phone. Yeah, okay. So Gregory's pointing at a bunch of post-it notes.
On my ceiling, because this is the only place I have left for it. Yeah.
You can't shoot me.
Not in the head.
So usually I think of tasks and things I need to do and make a note in my phone. And then I transcribe that into either my current sketchbook. So it's kind of full of thumbnails and drawings and then lists. Or I do what Gregory does and I put it onto a post-it note and plunk it into the studio. And as I finish it, I get to crumple up the post-it note. But I was wondering, Drake, like you have a lot of things going on, like project and plan-wise. How do you keep track of it all and what's your process? And then Gregory and Dan, what do you guys do?
Can't hear you, Drake.
We lost you. We lost your audio, Drake. Your microphone fell off.
Or maybe the battery died?
Or the battery died?
You hear me now?
Yeah.
Yeah,
okay. It's because my headphone, it automatically turns off if there's no sound coming out. And I'm not using the sound. So. But anyways, yeah. I've had a system for like years now just because I'm so self-directed. I have my Google Calendar permanently open in one of my four monitors, and I just like make schedules for myself there. I also have a commission list right now since I've started taking commissions, and it's basically a Google spreadsheet, and it's got like the amount I made and like USD and Canadian, and it's all like if I finish it, I like paint bucket tool the entry into red. I also have a time tracking system where once I start working on something, I start a timer to see how much time I spend on certain drawings or projects, just to make sure my hourly rate and how much I charge them matches the project I'm working on. And yeah, I've just been doing this for years, so I never forget anything. But if it's not on my Google Calendar, I'll definitely forget it. Like I missed a dentist appointment like last week because I didn't put it on my Google Calendar, so I was like, fuck. But yeah, that's my system.
So calendar, okay. Gregory, follow that up with your magical system.
Well, see, it's interesting that you say that because it's essentially the same thing. It's just in different places. So we have, you know, because we've got the family system, so a little different than Drake. So we have a calendar central in the house where the kids' important dates, my wife's important dates, and mine tend to go on so that they overlap. My handwriting is basically illegible. No one ever knows what I have, just that I have something on that day when they're checking the calendar. And then I have a physical space in my own area where I put usually post-it notes or cards or something that is the project itself within the month that it's due. So like at the studio, which I miss enormously, we had this 8-foot bulletin board, which I had divided into months. And then I would put the card of the project I had in the month it was due. And then the details of the due date, the client information, the contact information on that card, like a recipe card. And then if a date changed or what have you, you could move it around in the month as things fluctuate. In publishing, stuff gets bumped around pretty often. But it let me look at the month at a glance and see here's 8 projects. And then I divided those months. We use the Scrum system essentially into projects that are sort of can be done, are being done, and need to be done in the future. And then ones that are finished would move to the bottom. And so you can look at a glance and say, you know, I've got 8 things going on. 4 of them I'm working on this week for sure. These 3 I finished. These other ones I haven't started yet, but they're supposed to be due this month. And it allowed me to manage that time. Since COVID, no, doesn't work the way I want because with the school schedule, with the kids, with my wife's home business, with my home business, with all the other things that we have going on, there's this compounding of working whenever you can when it's work and doing family stuff prioritized on the calendar. So we're really strict with keeping the school hours and the outdoor hours and the exercise things. We keep that because the kids benefit from that strict schedule. And then Tara and I end up having to work late into the night or get up early in the morning to fill in the difference in our work times. Now that it's just how it is, that doesn't bother me as much. But at the beginning, it created a lot of stress and anxiety because I felt like I was behind on everything all the time. What's been really good is that I'm collaborating. All the projects I'm working on are collaborations right now. So there's the other person to bounce it to. So I try to do my work, send it to them. And now I have a little note that says like, it's in someone else's court. I have a different system here at home, which is like, I can point at here, which is like things that other people have to do that I sent to them and things that I have to do to send to other people. And so to manage collaborators, that's become a different way of doing
it. I noticed there's more notes on the things that other people have to do than on your own part right now.
Just how I like it.
It means you're doing a good job, but the other people are not.
No, it just means I have a lot of things like that going on.
Okay.
My collaborators have been honestly, Justin included, just knocking it out of the park. I don't think, I'd probably be insane if it wasn't for everyone else fulfilling their obligations. Now, how about you, Dan?
Well, very similar to Justin, I use a series of lists. A lot of the stuff I do for my work are shorter tasks, I would say, than what you guys do when you're actually creating your works. I almost spend more than 1 or 2 hours on a single task. So it's a series of lists. Now, one thing I'm trying to do more of, since we live in the future and we have all this technology, I'm trying to use the voice assistants a little bit more, like Siri or Google. It's not working out as well as I'd hoped, because there's still it's just not compatible as much as I'd like, and the voice recognition is not as good as I'd like it to be. So sometimes I'll say, hey Siri, remind me to do this and this and this, and then I go to read it back and it doesn't even make sense what Siri took down as the notes. So I have to try to figure out what the hell it is I was supposed to do. But I just like the idea of interacting with these, even though I know they're not really like AI or anything like that. It just seems cool to talk to a computer about stuff. Makes me feel like I'm in Star Trek. I altered my Siri voice to sound, it's got an Irish accent now, and it sounds more like Friday from Marvel, from Tony Stark's AI that I took over after Jarvis became the Vision.
I've got to be British.
What's that?
I turned my Siri settings to British.
Yeah.
So that talks in a delicious British accent.
But yeah, that's pretty much it. Lists, lots of lists.
And one thing to answer that also, Justin, one thing I find myself using way more is my timer and my alarm on my phone. So because I have to compartmentalize what I'm working on, I will tell myself, you know, I have 2 hours to do this, or I have 40 minutes, I'm going to do this. Lately, it's been 20 minute stretches. So I'll set my timer. Yeah, the alarm goes off, and then I tell myself, okay, I do want to keep working on this. I know that, but I just can't. Like, the alarm is a reminder that there are so many other things that require my time that I have to pivot away from. Pivot is like the word of the podcast today. We've all used pivot like so many times. If this was a episode
previous episodes as well, I'll tell you this. In previous episodes, it's come up quite a bit. I can tell you, as the person who writes the titles for these episodes.
Moratorium on the word pivot. We're not allowed to say it anymore.
What's the rest of the year? What's a good synonym for pivot? I'm going to Google the synonyms now. Anyway, we should probably wrap.
Yeah. Go ahead. What was the movie that you used for the cutaways last episode, I think?
Daryl?
Daryl.
Daryl, yeah. I thought Greg might know it. I was originally going to do clips from Krampus because we promoted Sam's comic, and Krampus is my boyfriend. But I'm sure I've already used clips from the movie Krampus, and the only other I've already used all the Krampus stuff. So then the episode was about it was about trying new things, and then it was about experimentation. So I Googled like movies about experimentation, and then because you guys are so into robots,
1985 Daryl.
Well, yeah, and then movies about experimentation with robots, and that brought me to Daryl, which is about a kid who's supposed to be a robot, and it's a great 80s movie. Like, if you've never seen it, I would definitely recommend checking out Daryl. It's just a fun 80s, and as a kid, as a 9-year-old watching that when I first saw that movie, it was like, yes, I want to fly a freaking SR-71 Blackbird. Are you kidding me? Like, he does that in the movie. It's super cool. It's a great movie.
It's not a horror movie, is it?
No.
Horror movie from
Daryl?
Yeah, it looks scary.
No, not at all.
You could do a gritty reboot of Daryl, where he is now all grown up.
But did he grow up? He's a robot. How does he grow up? Anyway.
There you go.
Tie up another day. We should wrap things up.
Forever in a child's body as he grows to manhood. That would be pretty awful, right? He'd be smoking cigarettes and swearing and drinking whiskey, but he'd just be that same kid.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, bad. Well, thank you for arriving late, Drake. I really appreciate
my pleasure.
The efforts you made, and I'm sorry for Dan that we're going to have a long episode to edit, and I'm sorry that we made fun of you while you weren't here. You'll be able to listen to all the bad things we said and then call us out on social media to your 20,000 followers, so I'm not too worried about it. This has been Super Pulp Science, where we have talked about so many things. This is Gregory Kamichuk encouraging you to join the fight and make comics.